And we're back. Welcome back to another DFS Army Bowl Call Fantasy Football Podcast. All right, you saw us promoting it on social media. Today, we have a very special guest. I'm a big fan. Many of you know him as the fantasy football engineer, Kevin O'Brien. What's up, brother?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. And glad to be able to join the DFS Army that always kicks my butt every time I try to do the DFS world. See, your logo's there all the time.
Helmet after helmet, man. Yeah, no, those guys, the geek and all those guys, they have that on lockdown. But what we've been trying to do over the past year is trying to put out more season-long content and dynasty content. And, you're one of the guys that's my sanity check when I am forming my content, putting together my rankings. And you're the guy who always is teaching me something. There's a, every analyst has their handful of players and analysts that they like. You're one of the guys I go to, and we're just going to start it off right away. You came to my attention when your 2016 article about how you treat your dynasty team like a stock portfolio. Can you just talk about your history in the dynasty and, this question, your overall philosophy in dynasty in general? Sure. And then go into that whole portfolio thing.
Sure. Yeah. So I started playing Dynasty 2013 or so. I joined Twitter just looking for some redraft info for my home league, actually. And then I met up with some people that were doing Dynasty. I had no idea what it was. They got me hooked on it. We started a league, et cetera. And that first draft, coming in as a redraft guy, I drafted three really old running backs, which is like big taboo at the time, right? It took like Matt Forte. I think I took like MJD and probably AP when he was, before he faded. Now he's rebound a little bit, but I took these three aging running backs and then they aged out, right? They lost value. And here I am figuring like, man, I didn't really balance myself well enough. I'm left holding the bag, right? I had nobody behind those three running backs to really build a roster for a long time. And so I started looking into like, how do I become more balanced? And it occurred to me that a portfolio would be a better idea. So everyone has a 401k pretty much, or some sort of retirement plan, at least they should. And in those, we typically try to balance those. Now, say somebody's like 35 to 45 years old, right? You might have 50% of your portfolio in like a mid cap, right? Like you want it to be like semi-long-term, but pretty good growth, right? And then you have 25%, maybe that's like extreme growth, like small cap funds, high risk. And then 25% like in your bonds and your large cap, right? Going like that. So I applied that to Dynasty. And I said to myself that I want 50% in my core roster to be guys that are producing sort of at their peak. But I know that they might start to be on the decline, but I'm getting really good production out of them. And then 25%, I wanted to leave room for like the T.Y. Hiltons, the Larry Fitzgeralds, who, they'll produce on my roster. Maybe like you might consider those season-long type guys, but I don't necessarily need to trade them away. I can kind of use them and use them and lose them, right?
Right.
And then, and then the other 25% really quick was the high risk. So I wanted to either hold on to a first round pick, or if I traded my first round pick away, I wanted it at like a second year player that maybe was on the cusp of breaking out, but maybe not really producing.
Yeah. And the other thing that is, I made the same, I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but I made those same mistakes. When you talked about how you made those type of mistakes when you started out playing Dynasty, it actually made me feel better because, when I hear you talk about some of the stuff that we're going to get into and the stuff that you talk on your podcast, the Fantasy Football Engineering podcast, I'm always having these aha moments. I usually listen to pods while I'm riding my bike and I just have to stop and like replay it. So, but the one of the things it might seem basic 101 strategy to you, but what I tried to do was explain to the new dynasty players at DFS Army how building in a startup is building around the young wide receivers versus the running backs. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because as you know, you've been in drafts, people are going running back crazy lately. So talk about a little bit, if you don't mind, the startup dynasty and the strategy around wide receivers.
Yeah, sure. So this one, it could do like a 2-hour show on this alone. Cause I think what we're seeing is like 3-4 years ago, when there was less attention on dynasty, there was this urge to build for long-term 3-5 year windows, right? So like you didn't necessarily need to win right away. You played your redraft and seasonal leagues to win right away. And running backs, they produce early at a younger age and they seem to quote unquote hit early and seem to be predictable and they can win you weekly. A lot of us in seasonal, that's how we win. We draft these running backs heavy. We win in that week because the volume is predictable. Well, year to year, that doesn't really apply. So year to year, running backs are really hard to predict. I tweeted today something about James Conner, which had last year was age 24, and his ADP was up in the, you know, say 15, right? Second round ADP startups.
Yeah.
And Juju has a first round. Now, both of them had a down year, but you saw James Conner's value tank. It's because it's a running back. They are replaceable year to year. Versus wide receivers are much harder. So those elite talents we chase. So I think it really comes down to what is your own outlook, right? Just like I referenced the 401k philosophy, that is relative, your 401k is relative to your age. If you're 60 years old, you're different dynamics in that portfolio structure, right? So if you want to win early in dynasty leagues and you're okay rebuilding every 2 years, that you have to replenish those dynasty assets, then albeit go for those running backs. And I've seen some people be successful with it. I think the challenge for me is that I usually tend to build, and maybe I get too hung up in the build process that I really, really enjoy as a hobby, but I like to build them so that I have the DeAndre Hopkins that I can draft in 2013 as a rookie, and I'm still yielding great production out of him much later.
Yeah, that actually happened. Again, you're not going to remember this because, you know, I was more just following you on Twitter, and I was in a dynasty draft where I was just really in trouble in a startup, and I had asked you a question, and it was more, you're going to laugh now because it's so obvious, but I asked about DJ Moore, and I said, who should I pick? And I was naming all these running backs. I was naming Calvin Ridley, and I was naming DJ Moore, and DJ Moore was going like, you know, he was going at the end of the first, beginning of the second. You're like, no, take him at 6. Like, you're going to be happy. And now he's like a top 7 startup wide receiver. And you said it so casually. That's where I'm in envy. And a lot of the questions I get in nowadays about dynasty cap is about startups and how to build in startups. And now add on top of that super flex and tight end premium is just like exploded. I mean, like 2 years ago, nobody even understood what super flex is. And now it's, you don't play in super flex. That's like telling people you play in non-PPR now. So how are you handling that wide receiver early thing with valuing the tight ends and valuing the quarterbacks and startups?
Yeah. So generally I've seen the tight ends. I don't necessarily, I think the thing with the tight ends is still a one of position. I only need to start one. With a super flex is I need or want to start two, right? Even your middling quarterback is going to want to be in your super flex spot. With a tight end premium, you still only need one. So if you don't get the top Kittle, you know, things like that, you can still get a Waller type or somebody that's in the mid or later range that's still going to give you some upside. And tight ends are very fickle. They're very tight, touchdown dependent. Even in the 2.0 tight end premium, like what Safe Leagues has moved to. So the tight end premium definitely helps with the PPR, but they're very, like I said, tight end. You can get Eric Ebron goes for 10 touchdowns. He's going to be like a tight end one, right? And right. So with super flex, I do focus on quarterbacks a little bit more, and I've shifted my philosophy over time. I initially was a very heavy late round QB guy, and the problem with that is twofold. One is if you're going to stream it, it's very hard to stream even one quarterback if you're a casual player. If you're going to be on top of this roster constantly and turning over, this is why actually in my pod before I went on hiatus, actually, I started interviewing DFS guys because DFS guys, you guys really know weekly matchups, right? So when you're streaming a quarterback, you look at those weekly matchups and you know this quarterback versus this offense or this defense, you really want this matchup and it's easy to stream. That management becomes a lot more difficult than super flex, more so than I even thought, right? So what I've moved to is I try to lock in that one QB, like a Dak Prescott, right? A premium asset at the QB1 for your roster. And then I stream the QB2 flex spot. So I might get someone.
I just got a question for you there, though. But how are you going to stream him in a Dynasty and Superflex league? Because, I mean, people are drafting people are drafting Marcus Mariota in these startups. So how there's no
absolutely. One. Yeah, absolutely. So like I lean more to auctions, but you definitely can get yourself like you could go say you even drafted a Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or something a little bit lower that has lower value than one of these top like Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott. Those guys are going high, right? Mm-hmm. You can still go down to like even a Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, but then pair him up, come back much later with a Jalen Hurts or something like that. So that, like I talked about before, when you have a 50% of your core, you may say like Matt Ryan's your QB2 in that core, but then in your back pocket with your like small cap fund in that 25% group, you got a Jalen Hurts bubbling up, right? And you want to keep an eye on that, right? If he's going to emerge and be a starter and be good, he'll then replace Ryan as he gets phased out. And you know, constantly, right before you jump in here, I want to point out, everyone says QBs are hard to get. I got Jarrett Stidham, I think a rookie pick, mid-fourth round last year in Superflex. I think I went like third round, dart throw, I took Locke, and then fourth round, I took Stidham. And now they're likely starting quarterbacks.
Right, and even yeah, and even Daniel Jones in softer leagues was going in the second round of Superflex. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, I was so happy in a couple of the leagues where, you know, I'm in with a bunch of my home league donkey friends where I was able to grab him the second round. But then I go into some leagues with, you know, some other analysts and some people on Twitter, and he goes at 1.7. So it's very interesting, as you point out. So you've talked about on your podcast, and this really fascinated me too, as you were talking about, we get excited about these rookies. I'm going to let you tell the story because I just think that the audience here, and I'm sitting here with Kevin O'Brien, the fantasy football engineer. Go give him a follow on Twitter. It's at @_FF_engineer. I have that right, right?
Yep.
Yep. So
two underscores committed. That's to right. It. Not going back.
You're talking about a guy, his last name is Seslowski here. I know about tough Twitter names. If they want you, they're going to find you. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And I was going to say, as you were talking about how we get excited for these rookies and then about how the redraft community throws cold water on it. Can you just go through that analysis about how this time of year, you know where I'm going with this, right? I would love to hear. Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, so a great example of that is Burrow, right? Number one quarterback in the NFL. Superflex, you know, he's debatably top three pick depending on your league and how you feel about Burrow and his upside lack of rushing kind of thing, right? So either 101, 102, either way, he's cream of the crop right now. We're talking about him. Couldn't be more ecstatic. And then you go to look at redraft rankings and he's like QB 20. It's like, that's cold water, man. Like when you get like so down into dynasty research and you're like, okay, you go through the combine, like say you're in February, you're like, looking at who's going to go to the combine, you know, what's your rookie board going to look like? You start watching film like me, you start digging into stats, and you're like, man, Burrow looks great. He's going to be my 101 for sure. You know, he's number one pick, known it for months. Bengals not really, you know,
he's
floundering.
Pro ready.
Right? This is lock, stock, barrel, right? This is it, right? And then the draft's over, and like, not 2 weeks later, guys, like these big redraft guys like Evan Silver and all these guys, right, who I love to death, trust me. Throw this cold water, you look at these projections and stuff, and you're like, Brady at 43 is going to throw for 5,000 yards, but Burrow is going to be a QB 20. And it's like, wait, what? I draft, you know, a lot of people in Dynasty, if they're drafting Burrow that high of a pick, they want him to start, you know? This is the hype with CEH, is that he's going to jump right in. He's going to produce in your roster. And especially if you're from a seasonal world, you want these guys to like be producing immediate success, right?
It's funny. I had this conversation with another guy I do a podcast with, and I said to him, I said, all right, you're so confident CEH is going to be the guy. And it was after I heard your cold water argument, and I said, let's make a bet. You know, we made a wager. Who's going to have more fantasy points week 1 through 4, Damian Williams or CEH? And it's a real bet. You know, like Damian Williams in redraft is going like in round 8, you know, or 6 or wherever he's going, you know, and CH is sometimes in crazy drafts is going at pick 13. So it's it really plays into what you said. When I was listening to that on your pod, man, I literally had like laugh out loud moments. So and I see you're saying it with such glee. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So the one thing that Kevin does I think is really great is he gives away so much value free, including on his website, which is that theffengineer.com. And on there, he has rankings and they're never in line with the consensus. And the last couple years that I've checked him, I was like, well, this guy is just so out of line. And then he ends up, you know, being more correct than not. He's got a pretty pretty good hit rate. And when I say pretty good, I mean great. And this year is no different. There seems to be a big five running back craze before everyone even thinks about going wide receiver. I check out your rankings and you have Lamb and Judy high. I don't want to circle back to the same conversation, but are Lamb and Judy the type of prospects that really are just, this was a no brainer, a rank above some of these elite running backs?
Yeah. I mean, part of that goes to my personal philosophy is that like I talked about before, I want to build that long term. So I do value wide receivers over running backs. And it's likewise, I'll put someone like Justin Jefferson over DeAndre Swift or Cam Akers, who maybe not quote unquote elite prospects or landing spots such as Taylor and CEH will be. So obviously CEH and Taylor are above Justin Jefferson, but I still have Jefferson above that second group of running backs. And like you said, a lot of people are lumping those five running backs all together because everyone's chasing the RB value, instant success. So if your personal philosophy is that you're chasing those running backs, then certainly my rankings aren't to supersede your own preference, right? This is sort of my rankings. You know, I put them out there. This is how I value. And my approach is this long-term approach. Typically, if you're looking at rookie rankings this high, I like to have the thought process that if you have the 101 and you deserve the 101, you shouldn't be building with CEH. If your roster right. deserved the 101 and you take CEH looking for immediate production, he's not turning around your roster. So either you need to trade back and get the wide receivers at ADP. This is why ADP is so important to me. You got to balance rankings versus ADP. If I have Lamb high and I can't trade out of the pick, I will take him depending on my build. However, if I can trade out and somebody really wants CEH, I know that I have those receivers high on my board. Leverage with the ADP, I can move back and pick up some more to build my dynasty rather than trying to force fit a 101 of CEH.
Yeah, and that's a perfect lead in for the next thing I want to ask you. And this may seem like an obvious question, but I get it a lot and I know it, but I don't practice it. And that's balancing rankings and tiers. Now, you talked about this a little bit on your podcast, and this is a philosophy that you go by. Can you just talk about the importance of tiers being more important than rankings?
Absolutely. So the tiers are important because often in drafts, which this is one of the reasons I started my podcast, because I consider myself not an expert. I consider myself a casual player asking the questions that casual players want to answer when they're listening to podcasts, right? So if you might hear people talk such at a high level sometimes that they glance over what's real. And you often ask yourself, are these people actually in any drafts? Because it's not easy to trade the 105 for the 106. Like they think that you can just, trade down from the 101 to 102. And it's like, people know that what you're doing, right? They want you to either, you know, pick it or not, right? And so this is not as easy as people like to say it is, just to trade down. Obviously, you can try, and I don't discourage it necessarily, but tiers capture this. It's almost like a catch-all. So, like, if you can generate tiers at the top, say you have four, like I would put four at the top, Lamb, Judy, CEH, and Taylor. Those are my top four. I'll be thrilled to walk away with any four of those at any one of those spots. If I'm sitting at 103, it's going to be really difficult for me to go to 101. But if I have a tier and I'm happy with those four picks, I can stay at 103 and I don't have to actually pay up for any one of those four, right? Because it's going to be really negligible. If you're pinning yourself to say that I only want CEH, you end up going to go, it's like I liken it to going to the grocery store when you're hungry. If you go into a rookie draft saying, I got to have CEH, I'm not leaving this draft with CEH. And, you know, Twitter, it's fun to say CEH no matter what because of the, you know, draft day movie, right? Looking at that note, right?
But I like that movie, by the way.
I love it. I bought it and I watch it every year. So, but I don't think that's a great idea because I think you go in, like I was saying, going to the grocery store hungry, you're going to end up wanting to overpay just to get CEH, losing all the necessary research or, you know, restriction that you should have. You know, some people give up their second just to move up one spot and go CEH over Taylor. And it's like this, you're kind of losing sight of it. I think they're both elite prospects and they're in the same tier. You really shouldn't be giving up that second round pick in a deep draft to go up and get that negligible difference.
Yeah. And if you hear like this is exactly why I wanted to have Kevin on, because he articulates it in such a way, like, again, when I try to take, you know, and most analysts do this, they have a couple different analysts they listen to, and it helps form their philosophy. I mean, just normal musicians do the same thing. All musicians grow up listening to other musicians and it influences their style.
My pod man is borrowing brilliance, that I take everybody's brilliance and I just borrow it and use it for my own and reconstruct my own philosophy.
So you'll be proud to say I have borrowed your borrowing from brilliance term, and I use it in my school when I talk to the administration.
There's a book. So, I don't know if you ever caught that. There's a book that I read the book many years ago now, maybe 10 years ago. You can find it on Amazon cheap.
It's called Borrowing from Brilliance.
Yeah, Borrowing Brilliance. Two words.
Borrowing Brilliance. Okay, great. Yeah. All right. Excellent. All right. We're at 20-minute mark, but I got a lot more for you. You good to keep going?
Yeah, man. Keep going.
All right. Cool. This is awesome, man. All right. We're here with Kevin O'Brien, the fantasy football engineer. Check out his website, theffengineer.com. It's filled with rankings, his blog. He was away for a little bit. I was bugging him. I'm sure many other people were. He's back now, and he's going to be getting involved on Twitter as well, @the_FF_engineer. Give him a follow. All right, so now what I have for you is we're going to skip around a little bit here, and I have a couple players, and these are players that people are deciding between in startups. They're deciding between them in rookie drafts, and just want to get your take on them. You could do short takes. You could do longer takes. It's up to you, but it seems like Swift versus Akers is an actual debate in drafts. I have my own thoughts on this, but I want to hear – are they in the same tier for you? I mean, it seems like there's a perception that DeAndre Swift landed in a bad spot. I have been yelling that he's not in a bad spot. I'm just curious your take on those two.
Yeah, so definitely in the same tier. And I would add Dobbins to that same tier. I think it's Swift, Akers, and Dobbins, and actually no particular order. You know, somebody asked me before about what I have, Judy and Lamb. Who do I have? And I would like to say 1.5 and 1.5, right? I really don't have a preference. I would say Dobbins, Akers, and Swift are all that to me. You know, if we could put them at, you know, wherever I have them, 5.33333, you know, 5.3333, they'd all have the same thing. You know, we could do that in ADP. ADP, they can all be averaged out to the equal. I would say that the difficulty in separating them is the bias that we have against the Lions rushing, right? That they just don't like to rush. They're not good at it. Who knows? I don't even think they can figure out why they're so bad at it. And they keep throwing talent at it, right? They keep throwing Kerryon Johnson early-ish pick. And then they're now throwing more capital at it to see if they can solve their issues. Now, I think what happens is Stafford probably doesn't like to run the ball or something. There's something there that is preventing that team to run. Now, on Akers.
Well, I just want to add, before you go into Akers, I just want to say that Kerryon Johnson, even in his pre-draft process, I remember reading a quote saying something that he didn't see himself as a workhorse. He saw himself as a 12 to 15 timeshare back. And that seems what Swift profiles as well. That's why I thought it was a good landing spot, because both backs are going to seem to thrive in the 15 to 18 touch role. And, you know, maybe they're more productive with that type of workload.
Yeah, I think it's tough to say it's a good landing spot. I think you're fooling yourself or talking yourself into wanting Swift. Because I mean, yeah, I was high on Swift pre-draft, but this is a little bit of cold water for us to realize that we don't even know that Detroit can have a running game. Period. Mm. And now you're trying to fit two potentially talented. Kerryon Johnson's talented back. People can throw in fantasy. We want to throw him to the to the dogs, but he isn't scrap meat. He is a good back, and whether he can flourish or not, that's something different. And whether a running back can flourish in Detroit is something else. You know, right. I mean, I did read an interesting quote. I can't remember where it came from, but it's something to do with, you know, Detroit hasn't run the ball since Sanders. And it's like, well, they haven't had a talent since Swift, since Sanders. So, you know, there's two sides of that argument. It's very difficult. I think if you're on the clock and you have to choose between it, you have the option between Akers and Swift, I'm probably going Akers. Okay. Just because there's more, my confidence is higher in Akers' situation. I think the Rams could get that offense back on track. I think there's more weapons around them. I think they can or have shown they can run the ball with Gurley. And they would be willing to flourish in that environment where Patricia, although he's pretty good in defense, that's still a pretty bad football team. And I can't imagine, DFS knows this better than anybody. You guys focus on what are the marginal things that are going to make running backs better in DFS matchups? A good offense. You want them to be close to the end zone, more attempts, more opportunities in the red zone for those running backs to get that, those touchdowns and get the PPR in a negative game script kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what the geek always says, the founder of DFS Army. He's like, we only take running backs on good teams. So he's echoing what you're just saying right there.
Yeah, yeah. So like you're just looking at like there's just too many negatives that make me think that the risk is higher. You're it's not that you can't be wrong, but in my opinion, you're just fighting against a lot of negatives, right?
Right. And unnecessary negatives too, you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. And so I would probably go Akers. But generally speaking, for me, I'm lucky because when Akers is on the board, I'm taking Jeudy or Lamb. So
right. For you, yeah. No, you're always getting them at a value because you have them ahead of those backs and they're always fault. They're not, I mean, no one's even thinking about those guys ahead of pick five. It's just in none of the drafts I've been in. I've been in like four or five rookie drafts already.
Yeah, the distributions of ADP show that. That's absolutely true.
All right. So last year I felt like I was alone on this one, and I wasn't just flag planning. I really believed that Miles Sanders was a better fantasy pick long term than Josh Jacobs. Now, it's still, the jury's still out, but knowing what we know now, where were you last year with Jacobs and Sanders, and knowing what you know now, which one would you take first in the dynasty startup?
So full transparency, last year I was on hiatus and not really paying attention to this stuff. Fair. But I would probably have been higher on Jacobs because I felt like he could be a workhorse roll three down back because he actually was a pretty good receiving back in Alabama. So it was surprising to the dynasty community, NFL community, that he wasn't given that opportunity with the Raiders to actually catch the ball. So that is limiting in his upside, where Sanders is almost the opposite case. He always seemed to be able to get the receiving work, but he wouldn't get the early down work with Jordan Howard there. Now without Jordan Howard there, it seems like it's all on Sanders' shoulders, albeit that they've indicated they're interested in
Carlos Hyde. But that come out, if they, again, I'm shaking my head, but then, you know, they'll get me on that one. But if they sign a vet running back, isn't that more of an indictment on the depth? Isn't that like more of a doomsday scenario for like someone like Boston Scott, who people like late in drafts? I mean, I still think Sanders is, you know, isn't he a 25 touch running back?
It is. And you know, the truth lies in the middle is that the reason that people got so excited with Sanders is that he's likely, people are chasing that these elite backs need that 60% plus market share of their offense, of total market share, either running back receptions or overall touches, basically. And we were hoping that Sanders was approaching that group because he had nothing. Boston Scott alone wouldn't be preventing Miles Sanders from getting that kind of a workload. Now, if you add in a Jordan Howard, if you add in a Carlos Hyde, you're back to the Jordan Howard scenario where they're giving negative EV touches to a back that's not going to do anything for us fantasy-wise. Just like, you know, I forget if it was this pod or somebody else's, they said that we think about how we thought about Duke Johnson. And, you know, we thought that he was absolutely, Bill O'Brien's going to use this guy like James White. This is a great situation.
Paid a third round pick for him.
And then Carlos Hyde comes in and it's just like, and it's the wrong decision for Bill O'Brien. It's obviously not doing what he wants to accomplish. And yet he still just keeps on doing it despite our fantasy sadness. Right. So I think Carlos Hyde could do the same thing for Sanders that gives him that split. With that said, why I said the truth is in the middle is that it doesn't mean, like you said, you knock Sanders all the way down. It just keeps him in that second tier, though, right? It keeps him out of that elite tier. And sort of what Chubb is feeling right now, because I think a lot of people think Kareem Hunt is going to do that to Chubb, that it's going to keep Chubb out of that elite tier of having that 65% touch share type role. And I think Sanders is still great. I love him. He's, 23, I think. He's still young.
Oh, Miles Sanders. Yeah, I think he's 22, or he might just have turned 23. He's super young.
Yeah. He's super young. So not knocking him by any means, but I just think that ceiling is being capped by a potential veteran running back.
Yeah, you talked about Kareem Hunt. I mean, he's a free agent next year. It's funny. It's because he's knocking Chubb's value. People, are taking him late. He could be, one of these running backs next year in dynasty startups that has the Todd Gurley role, the one-year contract on a team all to himself. As you called, that you said that these running backs right now in startups to have this stink cheese on them. I thought that was, when you were talking about like the zero running backs for dynasty startup, and I thought that was really smart. What you said that there's a whole class of running backs that have stink cheese on them, and you want to take that from there. I already kind of used your punchline, but who are those running backs this year? I guess the ones that nobody wants.
Yeah, certainly James Conner is in that category. David Montgomery's in that category. Leonard Fournette's in that category. These guys, it seems like it's just unpopular to have on your roster. And a recent auction that I just completed yesterday was I got Montgomery maybe somewhere around $55, $60 out of a 1K budget. This is the RB3. This is not, people are chasing the CEH is for 150, 170, McCaffrey goes for 200 out of the 1000 budget, and I'm getting Montgomery for 50. And I got Montgomery, James Conner, and Akers, I think for, let's say like 250, and McCaffrey's going for 200. So yeah. I got three running backs for the price of McCaffrey. And, probably, it's fun to wanna, McCaffrey's a league winner and everything, so I don't want to compare those three to one, but you get my point. These James Conner, Dave Montgomery, Leonard Fournette, these guys are all in that stink cheese, man. People just don't want to own them.
Yeah, and you talked about also, when you're talking about running backs in Dynasty, I've heard you talk about committee of two versus three. Do you mind talking about that for a minute?
Sure. This is definitely a borrowed brilliance idea that I've gotten from people like Pat Corain and Pete Overzet and Davis Maddock, a lot of these DFS guys, actually, that we shouldn't fear committees of two, but we really can't do committees of three. So like with running backs, particularly, so if there's a committee that's getting receiving work and a rushing work, and then there's a third back that comes in that dilutes that, sort of like a Patriot situation, right? We got Michelle, James White.
How about the Colts this year? Isn't that going to be a committee of three?
The Colts is an interesting one. I think we don't know enough yet. I don't know that we can project Nyheim Hines to be like a 75. The Colts, where this comes from, I don't know if anyone has heard this, but the report was that the OC from Indy said that he views Nyheim Hines as Rivers, Woodhead, and Eckler.
Right.
So that now fantasy projection people are going crazy thinking, oh my God, are we now projecting Nyheim Hines with 75 catches and the coach is going to be loyal to Mac and now we got him trying to fold in Taylor. And now your mind goes crazy, right? Today I was thinking about it, like, did the GM take Taylor without even talking to the GM? Because that just feels discontinuity there, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, well, let's look at the catches for the last... And again, I know it's a different quarterback, different situation, but Nyheim Hines, his first 2 years in the NFL, 63 catches in the first year and 44 in the... in the second year. Now you add in the Rivers and but they have another. I mean, he's going to at least, would you say, is 40 a conservative projection for his catches?
I think so. Yeah. Unless they, you know, so there's two sides of this, right? Is one is predicting what these stupid coaches and GMs will do and what they should do, right? Because there's clearly times people say, what do the fantasy community know that these real coaches don't? Well, we don't have bias. That's the problem. That's the differentiator. Why armchair DFS analysts, dynasty analysts, people like us from our homes, from our basements, from our couches, the reasons that we can be right and they can be wrong is the bias. Coaches have bias to their veterans. They have bias against this guy that can't pass block, even though passing and completing a pass is so much more better than having a running back just run into a line. So when you now are going with someone like Mack and Taylor, why would you ever put Nyheim Hines on the field? You would just want to throw it to Mack or Taylor. Taylor can catch the ball. There's no reason why you wouldn't want Taylor in space to throw it to him. He's the
Mack was a Mack was a good pass catcher in college. I mean, it's exactly. Amazing.
So these are your top talents, and yet you're pulling Hines on the field to throw it to him when you have these two, one potentially elite prospect and the other one already has shown to run well behind that Colts O-line, which is very good. And now you're just going to let Rivers throw it to Nyheim Hines because he likes to. So, you know, is this what they should do or what they will do? It's probably what they will do, but they shouldn't.
Right. So you hit on something else now, and I'm going to shift away from player analysis for a second here, because this I think is going to be real value to the listeners. And you talked about a little bit earlier about trading, and you know, in some of the analysts, they're saying, "Oh yeah, I'm not going to take him at this player at the beginning of this round. I'm only going to take him at the end." But how do you get to the end? How do you make these trades happen? And you've talked about in your podcast about getting players that you like as throw-ins, as strategies. And you've also talked about maybe doing like a low-level trade where you let the other guy win the trade. Can you talk about those two different things as far as how to execute trades?
Yeah, one of the difficult parts of trades is that people have buy-low targets that everyone sees across Twitter. So if someone like Evan Silva comes out and says, buy low on Nyheim Hines, right? That's like blinking red lights. Everybody's going to see it. That you're not pulling that by anybody, right? So if you send a trade offer for even your second round pick for Nyheim Hines, which I think people should instant accept, nobody's going to. They're going to squeeze you for more value just because it's a hot name. Now, what I've always liked to do is sleight of hand. I like the deal not to be about that player you're trying to get on a buy low. So I would look at a player's or an opponent's roster and look for some player that I really want to acquire. Let's say Keenan Allen or something like that. You think you can buy low on Keenan Allen. Nobody's pounding the table that you should buy Keenan Allen. So approach him for like your late second or whatever you can offer for Keenan Allen and say, you know, I think you're actually got the better end of this deal. Like, you know, I don't really want another pick. Could you just, you know, let's add Nyheim Hines and that will even it out. And then what ends up happening is psychologically that the person that you're trading with actually starts to think that he's using the hype surrounding Nyheim Hines against you. And the psychologically completely changes in that trade discussion. Because if you go to them saying, I want to acquire Nyheim Hines, they're already going to try to grease you for value, like I said earlier. But if the trade is not about Nyheim Hines, they're going to think that they're squeezing you for value because the trade's about something else. So it's a little bit of sleight of hand. And I've definitely been able to acquire buy low players that way. And not to say you should make a bad deal, right? Don't force yourself to buy Keenan Allen. That's just an example. You can go after another player or pick or whatever. And it's just, you know, something like Mecole Hardman, who was someone I talked about recently, I want to buy him, right? But if I go and say, you know, I'll give you my second for Mecole Hardman, and maybe you look at a trade calculator and that's even. The mere fact that you're going to acquire Hardman, that you're actually the instigator, you know, you're the initiator of the trade, your trade partner is going to look at that as you want this player. You're going to have to pay more for me to make worth my time to even talk to you. Right. So that's difficult, right? It's very hard to get those guys in a trade when they're the topic of conversation.
Yeah, I'm sitting over here giggling my ass off, but this is fun for me, man. This is the kind of stuff that you hear on Kevin's podcast. I mean, he just comes out with this stuff, and I'm trying to give you, in addition to some new content here, some of his best of hits that, you know, I've tried to explain what you talk about to your friends, and without you, it's. You have a way of explaining how the art of a deal works, how these, and there's a lot of these tips. So go check out his podcast. It's the Fantasy Football Engineering Podcast. He's back. He's going to be doing them now. How often? At least once a week now, or a few times
once
a month?
A week. Okay. Yeah, once a week.
Great. He's got some great guests on, all the heavy hitters, all the guys you want to hear from. And honestly, my favorite is when he's by himself, just talking, but I know it's always easier to talk to someone else. All right. I got a few more questions for you here, Kevin. I got a list, but you know, I'll save some for the next time you come back. But what are your earliest memories of football? We're just going to go a little off of Dynasty for a second here. What got you hooked? Sure. What are your nostalgic memories of football?
Man, watching Young hit Rice on those slants, dude. And that West Coast offense, that had it for me. Man, I Tecmo Super Bowl playing as a kid, yes. Nintendo, you know, this old
San
school
Fran,
stuff.
San right? Fran wasn't fair, man. They weren't fair to use in Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah, man. I was San Fran, and my buddy would switch between the Giants and Bo Jackson on the Raiders. Bo Jackson was unfair. I mean,
That was ridiculous, and obviously, when Super Tecmo Bowl came out, he wasn't Randall Cunningham. He was QB Eagles.
Yeah.
They couldn't get his licensing right.
Yeah. So, just watching the 49ers, that I just, and you know, it still carries me to this day. I like precision, man. I like Judy over Lamb in a vacuum, right? I like the route running of Judy versus the metrics of Lamb, or the sort of nebulous way that Lamb beats people just with pure talent, not necessarily sharp route running, right? Judy's that footwork guy, the instant separation. That, you know, like I said before, with Steve Young, three-step drop, slant, and that West Coast offense, it just like that still carries me in, man.
See, for me, he's on the Mount Rushmore of QBs, and I know that's a whole nother debate and a whole nother podcast, but I still think Steve Young, with that skill set at that time, I mean, he would translate to today's game with his skill set, you know?
Absolutely. He was a running quarterback. It was unheard of in an offense like that he would be a running quarterback, but yeah.
All right.
Montana didn't run.
Mm-hmm. No, he was the statue guy. All right. How about what NFL rule would you like to see changed? Even if it's a little out there, what's something you think they need to change right away? And if you could snap your fingers, Commissioner Kevin could have a rule change, what would it be?
This is a good one, man. I don't like kickoffs. I don't think they're exciting. You know, I remember watching, it felt like there were more returns. Now you got me off key here. I didn't expect this question, but now I'm interested to look at the data, how many kick returns there are for touchdowns. I just remember, you know, Devin Hester's and these guys always, like, it seemed like a real possibility that you could return a kick. I don't know, maybe like
the kick return thing. So what would you do instead?
Punt kicks, you know, freehand punt kicks rather than kicking from a tee. Kicking from a tee, it feels like everybody goes to the end zone.
When we used to play football when we were kids, you'd throw off as the kickoff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe punt off, but still.
Yeah. Okay. So no kickoffs. All right, cool. All right. Now here's another one for you. And now this one's even going a little bit. What movie terrorized you as a kid that still terrorizes you today? Have you watched it?
Oh, didn't expect this, totally off the cuff. No brainer, Star Wars, man. I have still visions of nightmares that I had as a kid with the what are the
Star
machines?
Wars?
Yeah, man. So when I saw Star Wars, and I used to live in this hill. This is funny. I didn't expect this question. So I lived on a hill, like it was my base of my house was at the base, and then there was a big hill, rocks and stuff like that. I used to have this reoccurring nightmare that there were Star Wars invading down that hill.
And like troopers, stormtroopers and stuff?
Armed troopers, and what was the one with the four legs that walked?
Oh,
the machines.
You're talking about the AT-ATs.
Yeah. So those coming down the hill after me, right? And like Oh man, yeah,
that's definitely. I was not expecting it. So Star Wars is like, you know, for most people, they would pretend to use lightsabers and stuff, but that's funny that terrorized you. Yeah. I mean, for me, easily it's The Shining. I mean, I'm sure that's a pretty generic. I can't even watch that today without thinking
maybe
about.
Maybe I had better parents protecting me.
Oh no, totally, dude. I was the fourth child. my parents were, you know, my curfew was come home at whatever time you want o'clock. It was pretty bad, which is, you know.
As a dad of four kids, I can totally sympathize with that four kid
thing. Yeah, exactly. You're in sugar the shit time in there. All right, man. This was fun. I'm here with Kevin O'Brien, the fantasy football engineer, former writer for all the big sites, including DLF. What is a little bit, just quickly again, we should have done this at the beginning, but do the 30-second lightning round resume. What is your history in the industry before you took your hiatus?
So maybe 2014-ish, there's a guy that was running a football website that was free. It was really, really basic. Actually, Pat James. So Pat James DFS, he's in the DFS community pretty big now. He used to write for 4-4, still does. So Pat James contacted me to write basic fantasy football articles on free on a website that no longer exists. I started writing philosophy type articles that people caught on to. And then from there, I jumped to Fake Goods with Rich Rebar and Chad Scott. So Chad Scott's not around on Twitter as much anymore, but Lord Reeves, everybody knows. So Rich and me and Chad Scott, I spent about a year with them at Fake Goods doing Dynasty stuff. It was really fun working with those guys behind the scenes, seeing what they put out, how hard Rich worked. It was just amazing. And then I switched over to DLF. I think I did a couple for Blindsided Football. I don't know if you remember those guys.
That was five years ago. All the others you said, I'm familiar.
Yeah, so Fake Goods people mostly. And then I switched over to DLF when I got more Dynasty focused. And I was with DLF for maybe 2 or 3 years and before my hiatus. And the pod was under their flagship. And maybe someday I never burnt a bridge with them, I hope. But just unaffiliated right now, having fun, no commitment, you know, trying to do my pod once a week on my own, no ads, everything's free.
Yeah. And
this is a hobby for me, man.
And I'm telling you, for anyone who listens to this podcast, we've had our biggest off season. Like, there's more and more interest in football content, for obvious reasons, the quarantine, but it's just starting earlier and earlier. And for those that always ask me questions in our Slack chat, just so you know, Kevin is one of the guys that influences my thought process heavily. So go check out his podcast. You get it right from the source in addition to getting it to me, and follow him on Twitter as well @the_FF_engineer, and then go check out his website. Anything else you want to plug while you're on here, Kevin?
No, just in general, you know, this is a hobby for me. I enjoy it a ton. I enjoy talking to people, conversating about it. Hit me up on Twitter, anything. And even if sometimes I even try to get people, just ask me if I don't know the answer, I'll point you the right direction. This, by now, I've just been doing Dynasty for so long that if you're looking for a website for like college football stats or where to watch film or who has this tool, you know, hey, I don't want to pay for a sub, but looking for a free site, I probably can point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something, just hit me up on Twitter and I don't mind, you know, just spreading the information.
And he's not lying, because when he didn't know, we were strangers, and that's kind of how our interactions began. I was asking him questions while I was on the clock, and I was like, I almost felt bad that he was being so kind. I was like, I'm not used to people being this nice on Twitter. So definitely hit him up. I mean, I have a whole list here of questions. I'm going to save them. Hopefully you'll come back on again, man.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah, and you know, we'll have you on with the other guys too. They're gonna have a lot of questions. I mean, my questions on this thing were about the overlap of draft capital and analytics. The market share is important. I mean, we're gonna have to come back and do these. It's 3 pages worth. So, now this was great, man. Follow Kevin on Twitter again. Until next time, guys. We're gonna be back with another podcast. We're gonna start having more guests. Thanks to Kevin. And by the way, the last thing I want to say to you, Kevin, is that when you're a fantasy analyst in this industry, I'm still relatively new for it. I've been doing it only for about 18 months, but I've been playing forever. But I noticed one thing, that there 50% of it is obviously putting out good content like you do, and 50% of it is how you treat the guys coming up and how you treated us over here at DFS Army as we're on the come up and trying to make our mark in there. We appreciate it. We'll never forget, man. Your family over here, you're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, that's how I was welcomed by the DLF guys. You know, these guys like Ryan McDowell, you know, back when he had, you know, 5,000 followers or something, he would really reply to me. He followed me back. We would DM, you know, we were like going through ideas and stuff. And Carl Safchik way back on the DLF pod and all these guys, they were just very nice to me. Rich Rebar, they were all very kind to me. And I think that's just the way I kind of came up in Dynasty. And I think that's just, I it's cheesy to say pay it forward, but it really is just passing it along, right? It's, yeah. It's, no, it's not, more it's brilliance not. That I got from someone else. I'm just keep passing it around now.
Yeah. And if you don't act like a knucklehead to people, they'll treat you well. There's a lot of the guys, like I said, I've been doing some work for some other companies too, that have been putting me on and giving me a shot. And like I said, if you have something to say, if you're excited and passionate about Dynasty and season long, and obviously the guys at DFS Army, the geek, the founder, they're all passionate about DFS. So it's just such a cool time to be alive and with all the technology and all the games that we have. So I know you feel the same way, brother.
Absolutely do.
All right, man. We'll catch you next time. Until everybody, we'll see you next week with another episode of the Bulk Call Podcast. Bye-bye.